This podcast is brought to you by Luca Mele, front-end architecture, team leadership, and technical consulting. Over 16 years of experience turning complex challenges into simple, effective solutions. Learn more at lucamele.ch.
You know, usually when you start a new software project, the first few weeks just feel like absolute magic.
Oh yeah, you are just flying through the work.
Right, like you're laying down code, features are popping up on the screen, and everything feels sleek and fast. It's like building a house and watching the framing go up in a matter of days. You look at it and think, wow, we are going to be done a month early.
The momentum is intoxicating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every decision feels lightweight because the system is still small enough to fit entirely inside your head.
Exactly.
You just haven't had to live with the consequences of your early architectural choices yet.
But then, almost inevitably, you hit like month three or month four, and suddenly you want to do something that should be totally trivial, like changing the styling on a drop-down menu or updating how a profile picture is displayed.
Right, something that should take 5 minutes.
Exactly. But when you go to make that change, you realize the wiring for that drop-down is somehow permanently tangled into the plumbing of your user authentication system.
Oh man, that is the worst feeling.
It really is. You can't just change the light bulb. You have to tear down a load-bearing wall just to see the wires.
And that moment right there, that is the breaking point for a lot of teams. The code base just starts actively fighting back against the engineers.
Yeah.
Every new feature request is met with a groan.
Mm-hmm.
And not because the feature is actually hard, but because the foundation is just too brittle to support it. I mean, it is the definition of architectural technical debt.
And that is exactly the mission of our deep dive today. Whether you are a seasoned front-end engineer who has, you know, felt that exact pain in your daily stand-ups, or maybe a technical manager trying to figure out why your team's velocity had just flatlined.
Or just someone insanely curious about how good software is put together.
Right. This is for you. We are unpacking a high-leverage architectural decision that can literally make or break a code base.
And we're doing this by looking at the writings of Luca Mele. He's a front-end developer and technical leader who has spent just a lot of time analyzing why code bases rot over time.
Yeah, and he traces a massive amount of that rot back to one specific failure, right? The lack of separation between smart and dumb components.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Because the concept sounds almost laughably simple on the surface. Smart versus dumb. I mean, it's an idea that isn't exactly new to the front-end world.
Right, it's been around.
But what fascinates me is how Luca points out that it is consistently, almost universally, misunderstood by teams. Like, it's a mental model that keeps you from slowing to a crawl by month three, but people still manage to implement it in a way that causes more harm than good.
Well, the misunderstanding usually comes from treating the concept as a superficial syntax rule rather than a fundamental separation of responsibilities.
What do you mean by superficial?
Like, developers often reduce it to simply separating components that hold state from components that don't. But Luca emphasizes that good architecture, well, it isn't about state management libraries. It's about reducing the cost of change over time.
Oh.
The true goal of any architecture is making the second feature you build significantly cheaper and easier to implement than the first.
That makes a lot of sense. So to understand why the split is so incredibly powerful when it's done right, we first need to define exactly what these terms mean in practice. We're going to strip away the simplistic ideas. Let's start with the dumb component. In Luca's philosophy, what makes a component truly dumb?
A dumb component is, well, it's radically agnostic. It operates in total isolation from your business logic.
Okay.
It has absolutely zero idea where its data comes from, what application it's currently running inside, or what the broader context of the user's session even is.
So it's completely blind to the app it's in.
Completely. It doesn't know what a shopping cart is, it doesn't know what a postal code is, and it certainly has no concept of what your back-end API schema looks like. It's just a pure translation layer.
Taking data and making it visual.
Exactly. It takes whatever data it is handed
and
translates it into a visual user interface.
It's just living in blissful ignorance. And if the user interacts with it, say, clicking a list item or, you know, typing in an input, it just blindly reports that interaction back up the chain.
Right, without ever knowing what that interaction actually triggers in the database. Let's look at a concrete example from the source material. A selectable list component.
Okay, the selectable list.
This dumb component doesn't care if it is rendering a list of shipping postal codes or a list of product categories for a sidebar or user roles in an admin panel.
It treats them all exactly the same.
Exactly. Its interface is defined purely in terms of generic structural concepts. It only knows about generic items that happen to have labels and values.
Right.
It knows it needs a generic callback when an item is clicked, and maybe it expects a string for placeholder text. That's it.
So it's just a generic shell. But wait, there is an important nuance from the source material that I want to highlight here, because I think it trips people up when they actually try to build these things. Dumb components can actually contain other dumb components, right?
Oh, absolutely. Composition is fully supported here.
Because it's not limited to just the foundational layer of your, like, buttons and inputs?
No, not at all. You could build a postal code list. Now, that name sounds domain-specific, but the component itself can still be entirely dumb.
How does that work if it has postal code in the name?
Well, it achieves this by aggregating the generic selectable list we just discussed and composing it with some extra visual UI, like perhaps a text label at the top or a little country flag icon next to the dropdown.
Oh, I see.
It remains dumb because it is not transforming raw data models or making API calls. It's merely composing visual building blocks together to create a slightly more complex visual building block.
Okay, so if the dumb component is just sitting there waiting for generic instructions, what is the smart component doing? Like, what is its actual mandate?
The smart component is the orchestrator. It bridges your back-end systems and your visual layer. It knows intimately about your business domain. It knows how to initiate network requests to your APIs. It manages the complex asynchronous state. It handles the side effects.
And crucially, it transforms the data, right?
Exactly. It transforms all that messy, deeply nested back-end data into the exact clean shape that the dumb component requires.
Let's trace that postal code example all the way up then. We have our dumb postal code list waiting to render its neat little array of labels and values. The smart component sitting above it in the tree would be something like, a postal code picker.
Right. The postal code picker is the brain of the operation.
Okay.
It knows that postal codes are a real business entity. It knows the specific endpoint on your back-end server where they live. It knows how to fetch them, how to filter them based on whatever country the user selected.
And then it maps it all out.
Yes. This is the critical data transformation step. It maps that raw, complex API response into the incredibly simple label and value format. The dumb component never, ever sees your raw API model.
Let me try a clarifying analogy here just to make sure the mechanics of this are crystal clear for everyone.
Go for it.
The dumb component is essentially like a universal picture frame. It really doesn't care if it's holding a priceless family portrait, a cheap painting of a bowl of fruit, or a movie poster.
It just holds whatever you give it.
Right. It just provides the wooden border and the glass. It says, I hold things that are exactly 8 by 10 inches. The smart component, on the other hand, is like the museum curator.
I like that.
The curator goes deep into the messy, chaotic archives, finds the specific historical painting, decides it's the right one for the exhibit, and then meticulously crops it or mounts it so it fits perfectly into that strict 8 by 10 frame.
That is spot on. The frame dictates the dimensions it can hold, and the curator has to adapt the art to fit the frame, which actually leads us directly into the most mind-bending part of Luca Maile's philosophy.
Yes, this is the good stuff.
Now that we know what these components are, we have to look at how they talk to each other. This is where the architecture really diverges from how most people write code.
The mental flip. I mean, this is the part of the deep dive that really forced me to rethink my own habits.
This is what Luca calls the provider-consumer pattern in component architecture. And it involves a complete inversion of how developers typically structure parent and child relationships.
Wait, okay.
In this model, the dumb component is actually the provider.
Wait, here's where it gets really interesting. Because as a developer, my natural instinct, and I think the instinct of almost anyone who writes UI code, is that the parent component is in charge.
Right, the parent is the boss.
Exactly. It holds the data, so it dictates what the child receives. Like, yeah. If I have a smart parent that just fetched a user profile, my instinct is to just pass that entire user object down to the child and say, here's the data, figure out how to render it.
Right.
Why on earth would you give the dumb child the power to set the rules?
Well, the friction comes from the long-term consequences of that natural instinct.
Yeah.
Think about what happens when the parent does dictate the shape of the data. If the smart parent component simply passes his messy API data directly down, the child component is forced to parse it. The child suddenly has to understand the internal structure of a user profile object or a postal code response.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the moment that happens, the child becomes permanently coupled to that one specific backend schema.
Right. It is no longer a universal picture frame. It is a frame that has been physically glued to one specific painting.
Exactly. It loses its reusability entirely.
Yeah.
Because it now expects a very specific back-end payload just to render a simple list.
I see. So how does empowering the child fix this?
By empowering the child to define an agnostic, generic contract, the child remains pure. The child acts as the provider of the interface.
It sets the terms.
Yes. It declares to the rest of the application, I provide a clean, well-defined way to render lists. Give me data shaped exactly like this, and I'll guarantee it looks great.
And the parent?
The parent, the smart component, is relegated to being the consumer of that interface. It consumes the child's contract by taking on the burden of transforming the API data to fit perfectly.
That is so wild. And Luca notes that this inversion of control extends to layout as well, right? Which is another massive trap teams fall into. The parent is responsible for the external layout context.
Right.
Things like the margin around the component, the gap between items in a row, whether it sits in a CSS grid or a flex box. The parent handles how the frame is hung on the wall.
Exactly. Because the child should never dictate its own external margins. It has no idea where it's going to be placed.
That makes total sense.
If a dumb button component has a hard-coded 20-pixel margin on the right side, just because it looked good in a specific header,
then that button is now useless in a tightly packed sidebar.
Precisely. The parent handles the layout positioning and the data transformation. The child strictly handles the generic shape of the data and its own internal visual state.
Okay, so giving the dumb child the power to set the strict contract sounds, well, beautifully elegant in theory. It's mathematically satisfying.
It is.
But let's move from architectural theory into practical reality. Because Luca promises this is the highest leverage decision you can make. What are the tangible payoffs for you, the listener, when you are actually sitting at your keyboard trying to ship a feature?
Oh, the payoffs materialize across almost every single phase of the development lifecycle, starting with your documentation and sandbox environments.
Like Storybook.
Yes, Storybook. When you drop a highly coupled component into Storybook, the experience is usually miserable.
Oh, man. Don't even get me started. For anyone listening who has ever spent an entire afternoon just trying to get a component to render in Storybook without crashing, it is agonizing.
It's the worst.
You just want to see what a green submit button looks like when you hover over it. Mm. But because the button is tangled up with business logic, you have to mock a readup store, fake a GraphQL provider, and simulate an entire user authentication context just to satisfy the dependencies.
And that specific pain is entirely eliminated by this architecture. Dumb components live beautifully in isolation.
Because they have zero dependencies.
It's exactly. Zero dependencies on business logic or global state. So your designers and QA engineers can test every visual edge case effortlessly. You just pass in the props.
Like, what happens if the text is exceptionally long?
You just pass in a long string. What happens if the list is empty? Pass in an empty array. You don't need complex back-end environments or mocked APIs to verify the user interface.
You're done in seconds instead of hours. And that strict isolation leads directly to the next massive payoff, which is the holy grail of front-end development, right? Truly shared code.
Yes. Because a component like our selectable list lacks any domain knowledge, it can be seamlessly utilized anywhere.
Wow. So the exact same code can power the e-commerce checkout flow, the internal admin dashboard, and the mobile web view.
Exactly. They become genuine reusable assets in a shared library. They aren't just copy-paste templates that developers have to painstakingly tweak every time they duplicate them.
Right.
Because they know nothing about your business. They belong to everyone.
Build it once, use it everywhere. I have to imagine this completely changes the approach to automated testing too. Writing UI tests for tangled components is notoriously flaky.
Oh, it's a nightmare. But here, testing becomes incredibly straightforward because you're dividing the problem in half.
How so?
Well, to test a dumb component, you don't need network interceptors or complex mocking libraries. You just render it with a set of inputs and assert that the correct visual output appears on the screen.
And conversely, testing your smart components becomes much cleaner as well.
Much cleaner. Because you aren't testing the visual DOM elements anymore when you test the smart component.
Right, because it doesn't handle the visuals.
Exactly. The smart component tests don't need to care if a CSS class was applied correctly or if an animation fired. You only need to test the data orchestration.
So you test that it successfully fetches the data from the API.
Right, and correctly transforms it into the shape the dumb component contract requires.
Mm.
You separate the complex asynchronous logic tests from the straightforward visual tests.
Which brings us to perhaps the most stressful part of an engineer's job, refactoring.
Yes.
Imagine the scenario where the product manager comes in and says, we're migrating our entire backend from REST to GraphQL. Or the design team says, we are doing a massive brand overhaul and changing the look of every list in the app. In a tangled code base, either of those requests is a nightmare.
A total nightmare. But because of this isolation, a design overhaul to add rounded corners and drop shadows doesn't risk breaking a database query.
Right.
You simply update the dumb component's CSS, and the smart component's data fetching logic remains completely untouched.
Yeah.
You're never accidentally breaking the application state just because you tried to make a button blue.
And on the flip side, if the backend team completely changes the API schema, the front-end design doesn't break.
Exactly. You just update the smart component's transformation logic to map the new API response into the same old dumb component contract.
So changes are strictly contained. The blast radius of a refactor is minimized, which completely removes the fear that usually slows teams down. So hearing all of this, if this separation is truly the single highest leverage decision a team can make, my immediate instinct is that I should go into work tomorrow, halt all feature development, and split every single component in my code base into a smart, dumb pair.
Oh, wow.
I should architect the perfect system from day one.
Right. Luca Maile explicitly warns against doing that. It is actually one of the biggest traps developers fall into when they learn this pattern. His answer to that impulse is a definitive no.
Wait, really? Why? If the architecture is so resilient, why wouldn't I want to implement it everywhere immediately?
Because implementing it everywhere from day one is just premature abstraction in disguise. I mean, we've all had DRY, don't repeat yourself, drilled into our heads since our very first programming tutorials. Developers are terrified of duplicating code.
Yeah, you see identical code and you immediately want to abstract it.
Right. But Luca argues that treating DRY as a religion here actually leads to over-engineered nightmares. He heavily favors Yajin I. You aren't going to need it.
Ah, you aging it.
Attempting to make things perfectly abstracted and reusable before you even fully understand how they will be used in the real world, well, that kills far more code bases than a little bit of inline code ever will.
So you shouldn't extract a perfectly generic, beautiful, dumb component just because you think the design team might reuse it in 6 months.
No. Luca advises that you should actually start with everything written inline in one single messy component. All the fetching, all the state management, all the UI markup just jammed together in one file.
It's like organizing a garage after you move into a new house.
How so?
Well, my instinct is always to go out and buy a bunch of highly specific, expensive, color-coded storage bins on day one, but I don't even know what tools I own yet.
Right.
If I just put my stuff in the garage and start working, eventually the friction becomes obvious. Like, once I realize I'm constantly tripping over a massive pile of gardening tools, then I go buy the specific gardening bin. You wait until the need actively reveals itself.
You wait for the friction. That is the perfect way to look at it. And the brilliance of Luca's writing is that he doesn't just leave it at wait for friction. He provides four specific concrete triggers.
Okay, four triggers.
You only split an inline component into a smart dumb pair when your code base naturally hits one of these thresholds.
Let's talk about how those triggers actually surface in a developer's day-to-day. I know I've definitely written components where I'm fetching a massive data set from the back end, and in that exact same file, I'm writing hundreds of lines of complex SVG code to render an interactive chart. It feels incredibly brittle.
Well, that scenario is a perfect example of the first trigger.
Okay.
When a component is handling significant data fetching alongside highly complex UI rendering, it is objectively doing too much. The cognitive load is just too high, and it's time to separate the orchestrator from the presentation.
Makes sense. And what about when a design pattern just naturally starts repeating itself? Like, say I build a specialized user card, and suddenly the product manager wants that exact same visual card on the analytics dashboard, but populated with completely different data.
That's the second trigger. The need has actively revealed itself.
Right.
The visual piece could clearly be reused right now in another context. That is the moment you extract the visual layer into a dumb component and let the two different smart components feed it their respective data.
Okay, another scenario I hit constantly is simply file size. Like, you start adding a few extra UI states, maybe an error boundary, and suddenly the file is 800 lines long. You're getting lost just scrolling up and down trying to find the submit function.
A massive, unreadable file is a classic sign the single responsibility principle is broken. And that's the third trigger.
Right.
When the file becomes a cognitive burden to navigate, splitting the logic from the presentation makes it manageable again.
And I imagine the final trigger ties back into our earlier discussion about tooling. Like, sometimes you just desperately need a component to be isolated so you can document it for the design team.
Exactly.
But the inline data fetching makes it impossible to render outside the main app.
Right. When you need to place a specific piece of UI in Storybook or a testing sandbox, and mocking the inline dependencies is just too painful, that is the fourth trigger.
So if any of those four friction points occur, you make the split.
Yes. And if your inline component is working fine and hitting none of these triggers, leave it alone.
He also gives a really specific warning in the source material about HTML that caught my eye. It's easy to get extraction happy once you learn this pattern.
Oh, definitely.
You see developers take a basic HTML section tag or a div that just adds a flexbox layout, and they extract it into a totally separate component called like flex wrapper or section container.
That is the definition of useless abstraction. You should never extract purely structural HTML just because it is HTML. You only extract components when they represent a meaningful, reusable piece of the user interface that requires a clear, defined contract. Hiding the basic building blocks of the web behind pointless layers of abstraction just makes the code base harder to read for the next engineer.
So bringing this all together, what is the ultimate takeaway from Luca's philosophy here? We've talked about the inversion of control, the tangible benefits for testing, and the discipline of waiting for the right triggers.
Well, the core takeaway is really about optimizing your timeline of productivity. On day one of a project, writing everything in line, jumbling the data fetching and the UI together, is undeniably the fastest way to get something on the screen.
Right, you're pouring the concrete as fast as possible.
Exactly. You will ship that first feature quicker if you don't worry about architecture. But the real payoff hits by month three.
The turning point.
Yes. The team that disciplined themselves to cleanly separate their smart and dumb components, waiting for the right triggers, but rigorously enforcing the strict data contract when they did split them, that team now possesses a rich library of tested, isolated, documented dumb components.
Wow, yeah.
So when the product manager asks for a complex new feature, that team can snap those existing visual components together and simply write a new smart component to orchestrate the data.
Well, the team that just kept writing massive intertwined components is dealing with a tangled mess.
Exactly. For them, every single new feature request is terrifying because changing one thing risks breaking three unrelated things.
That makes so much sense.
Good architecture is not about achieving some theoretical academic purity. It is simply about making the second feature significantly cheaper and less risky to build than the first feature. Separating your business logic from your generic UI presentation is the most reliable way to achieve that velocity.
It really is a profound mindset shift. If we go back to our house building metaphor from the beginning of the deep dive, the tangled code base is the house where the electrical wiring runs directly through the middle of the load-bearing beams.
Right.
But this architecture, this strict separation, is like true modular framing. You can completely rip out and remodel the kitchen without ever touching the foundational plumbing or the electrical grid. The pieces snap together perfectly, but they remain entirely independent.
It brings the joy back to engineering because you are no longer afraid of your own code base.
It really does. So to wrap up our deep dive today, I want to leave you, the listener, with one final thing to mull over that we haven't touched on yet, but that feels increasingly relevant.
Well, what's that?
Well, we are entering an era where AI is starting to generate huge amounts of front-end code. Think about what happens if your UI components have strict, incredibly well-defined, dumb contracts. If your component is completely decoupled from your messy business logic, an AI could theoretically redesign or rewrite your entire visual layer perfectly just by adhering to those strict data contracts.
Oh, wow. That's a fascinating thought.
Right. Without ever risking a change to your database queries or application state, building clean, dumb components today might be the exact architecture that makes your code base AI ready tomorrow.
That is a huge point.
And honestly, that answer might completely change how you write your very next line of code.